Krishna in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We may or may not be aware how rare it is to come in contact with Srila Prabhupada. And we may not be aware how rare it is to come in contact with ISKCON. And this is where I'm going to start on these three points. To come in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is something which doesn't happen. Mahaprabhu only comes one time in a day of Brahma. Once in a day of Brahma. And the theology of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so deep that it's something that has never been found in any other theology in the entire world. If you find a theology where the devotee is crying for God, then you can understand that's advanced. But if you find a theology where God is crying for his devotee, that's even more advanced. But when you find a theology where God becomes a devotee to cry for himself, then you can understand that's off the scale. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is Chaitanya Vaishnavism. That is the Gaudiya tradition, where God himself becomes a devotee to cry for himself. Now, sometimes we just take that like, yeah, God became a devotee and he's coming in the mood of Radharani. It just kind of rolls off the tongue. When we wait and consider that point for just a moment, that God has become a devotee to experience a relationship with himself, you'll realize that there's no theology in the entire world that even talks about this. Therefore, even within the Vaishnava tradition, for someone to come in contact with Mahaprabhu is very, very rare. There are many Vaishnavas in the world, but they may not have come in contact with Mahaprabhu. And it's actually mentioned that unless and until you come in contact with Mahaprabhu and Mahaprabhu's devotees, you can't even understand Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavatam, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's one verse where Swarup Damada tells a Bengali poet, Jaha Bhagavata Pada Vaishnava Rastane Ekanta Ashraya Kore Chaitanya Charane. If you want to learn Bhagavatam, then go and sit at the feet of a devotee. But not just any devotee, Ekanta Ashraya Kore Chaitanya Charane, a devotee who has taken full shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's very, very significant. You can go to a Krishna Bhakta to learn Bhagavatam, but you won't actually learn the full truth from even a Krishna Bhakta unless he's also a Chaitanya Bhakta or she's also a Chaitanya Bhakta. Why? Because even Krishna doesn't know the essence of Bhagavatam. How you say Krishna doesn't know the essence of Bhagavatam? Because Krishna couldn't understand Radharani's love, which is the apex of Bhagavatam. If Krishna couldn't understand the apex of Radharani's love, which is revealed in Bhagavatam, how will a Krishna Bhakta be able to realize it? When Krishna wanted to realize the apex of Bhagavatam, then he had to become Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to experience the culmination of Bhagavatam's love. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knows the essence of Bhagavatam, and therefore a Chaitanya Bhakta can reveal to you the essence of Bhagavatam. So even if you want to learn Bhagavatam, you have to come to a Chaitanya Bhakta. So coming in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is incredible, not just because of the mercy flow that comes from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is revealing the most confidential theology in the entire universe. One scholar, he wrote a book on Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he called it the final word. That's it, the final word. There's no words after Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's where it stops, because that's the culmination of pure love in its most intense form. So coming in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very, very rare. Somehow or other, we just bumped into it by grace. Not only have we come in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but we've come in contact with Srila Prabhupada. To come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master who's in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so rare. I'll tell you an amazing story. Prabhupada came on the Jaladuta and he stepped off the ship. He said, when I came off the ship, I didn't know whether to turn left or right. Now, I'll tell you an amazing thing. You may or may not know this. When Prabhupada came off the Jaladuta, you know how a ship, when it docks, then it turns around and then it goes back to the place it came from. So Prabhupada came off the Jaladuta, arrived in America. As Prabhupada walked off the Jaladuta, two American boys walked onto the Jaladuta. And why did they walk onto the Jaladuta? Because they wanted to go to India to find a guru. You think like, oh no. It's like the guru of gurus just arrived and then they go on the ship all the way to India to find the guru on the Jaladuta, the same Jaladuta that Prabhupada came on. They went to India, they went traveling everywhere, to the Himalayas, to South India, up and down, met many swamis, many sadhus, many gurus. After 1 year, they came back and they said, like, they were nice, but we never met anyone that was like our guru. And then they were walking down a New York high street. And then they saw a saffron monk. They were like, yo, we just came from India. What's a saffron monk doing here? Those monks, we saw them in India. Who is this? They bumped into Prabhupada. He said, like, Prabhupada looked at them. They looked at Prabhupada. They said, are you from India? Prabhupada said, yes, I'm from India. Prabhupada looked at them. He said, are you from India? They said, no, we're not from India, but we just came back from India. We're looking for a guru. Prabhupada said, don't worry, come in the evening and you can hear Bhagavad Gita. Maybe that will help you. And then those two individuals, their names were Keith and Howard, and they became Kirtanananda and Hayagriva. So just see, Brahmande Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Latavi. We're wondering. Not just wandering in universes, wandering from country to country, place to place. They were looking for a guru, but somehow or other, the guru was closer than they thought. It's very, very rare to come in contact with the guru. You need Krishna's mercy. You need Krishna's mercy to get the guru. Like Mahaprabhu, he came to Navadvip and he inaugurated the Sankirtan movement. And when Nityananda heard that Gauranga had come back chanting, dancing, he said, I'm going to come and join the party. So Nityananda came and he stayed in Nandanacharya's house. Mahaprabhu, by his transcendental potency, he could understand Nityananda has come. So he called up, he said, Haridas, Srivas, come here. I want you to go and find Nityananda. Haridas and Srivas went all over Navadvip trying to find Nityananda. They came back to Mahaprabhu. They said, we've been to every place. We've been to every corner. We've been to every house. We didn't find no Nityananda. Can't find him. Mahaprabhu said, you guys, okay, I'll take you. I'll take you to Nityananda. And then Mahaprabhu took them both to Nityananda and there was an ecstatic meeting. Now, the significant thing here is that who does Nityananda represent? The guru. Who is Srivas Thakur? He is Narad Muni, isn't it? And who is Haridas Thakur? He is Brahma. Now, who can know the creation better than Narad Muni and Brahma? Narad Muni's been to every corner of the creation. He's the transcendental spaceman. And Brahma's the one that created this whole universe. Who can know this creation better than Narad Muni and Brahma? But even Narad Muni and Brahma could not find the guru. Only when Mahaprabhu took them could they find guru. So to find the guru is a very rare thing. Prabhupada used to quote one proverb. He said, mother and father, you will get life after life. But to come in contact with a guru, Krishna guru nahi mile bhaja hariye, that's very rare. That's very rare. So somehow or other, we came in contact with Mahaprabhu. We came in contact with Prabhupada, and we came in contact with ISKCON. And sometimes when I say that one, then people are like, ISKCON. I mean, ISKCON has its good points and bad points. Like, some days I feel fortunate to be in ISKCON. Other days I feel like, you know, ISKCON's also like, it's a bit, it can be like the Wild West sometimes. It can be a bit of a rough ride. Prabhupada said, I built a house in which the whole world can live. Actually, you know where that comes from? Bhavananda Prabhu, once he went to a Navadvipa astrologer, and he took Prabhupada's details to the Navadvipa astrologer, and the Navadvipa astrologer said, I've built this man. He's amazing. This man has the power to build a house in which the whole world can live. So it actually came from the astrologer. ISKCON is amazing. From the day Prabhupada formed ISKCON, there were miracles happening. Miraculous things. So I tell you, in 1976, there were like not many devotees in the southern states of America. You know what they did in 1976 in the southern states of America? The devotees ordered a printing of 1 million copies of the Bhagavad Gita. And in 1976, this was a world record. No book in history was ever printed 1 million times in one go. The devotees did it. There weren't many of them. There was just a handful of devotees. But because they were empowered by Gauranga, because they were empowered by Prabhupada, they were doing incredible things. So this movement was full of miracles in the past when Prabhupada was here. Even right now, there are many miracles going on in ISKCON. Many miraculous things are happening. And in the future, there'll be many, many more miracles in this movement. Prabhupada created ISKCON as the vehicle to fulfill the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada said, ISKCON is my body. And there may be problems in ISKCON. One time I was with one senior devotee and another person came to him and said, oh, there's ISKCON this, ISKCON that, ISKCON's like this, ISKCON's that. And the senior devotee just looked at him and he said, don't you realize? You didn't get it. You're saying ISKCON this, ISKCON that. What you didn't understand is you are ISKCON. ISKCON is not someone else or something else or some other thing outside there. You are ISKCON. So why don't you make ISKCON what it should be? So sometimes there can even be problems within our own movement. But ISKCON is a miraculous place because it's the place which is specifically empowered by Prabhupada to fulfill the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so, we're incredibly fortunate to have this Sangha. And if each one of us make the Sangha of ISKCON more inspiring, more wholesome, more loving, then it will really be the house in which the whole world can live. And so, yes, we are fortunate to come in contact with ISKCON. ISKCON isn't just an institution. ISKCON, Prabhupada created it as a movement of adventure. ISKCON is not just about rules and regulations, but ISKCON is about experiencing Krishna. It's the Krishna consciousness movement, not just the movement to give Krishna consciousness, but the movement that is moved by Krishna consciousness. ISKCON is not just about belief in gurus, belief in Krishna. It's about actually directly experiencing Krishna. It's a spiritual science. So when we think about ISKCON, we can think about it more than just an institution or an organization, but we can think of it as the most dynamic family in which we can come very close to Krishna. So yes, we're so fortunate. We're so fortunate to come in contact with the most advanced theology in creation, Chaitanya Vaishnavism. we're most fortunate to come in contact with Srila Prabhupada, who's really the deliverer, who came down to our level. Once Brahmananda Prabhu, he was giving a class in Vrindavan, talking about Prabhupada. And then one devotee said, Brahmananda Prabhu, the way you talk about Prabhupada, to us it seems for you, Prabhupada is God. Brahmananda said, no, we made that mistake. We made that mistake at one point thinking Prabhupada is God. No, I don't think Prabhupada is God. Nowadays, you know what he said? Nowadays, I feel as though Prabhupada is greater than God. Because Prabhupada came to the lower east side to save us. Even Krishna didn't come to the lower east side until Prabhupada brought Krishna. By Prabhupada's desire, he brought Krishna. He said, I've caught you and I'm keeping you here. But Prabhupada came first because Krishna's mercy follows the bhakta's mercy. So that's causeless mercy. Prabhupada just came down, Swami on Skid Row, just giving Krishna consciousness. So fortunate to come in contact with Prabhupada. So fortunate to be in ISKCON. We are ISKCON. We have to make it what it's meant to be, to glorify Prabhupada. And in this way, when we actually sit down and think deeply, we could all be so many places in life. We could be doing so many different things. But where will you find happiness, bliss, adventure, magical, mystical, moving moments in your life like you'll find within this spiritual tradition? You won't find anything like it. People are just sitting around killing their time, not knowing what really to do, but a devotee gets up in the morning, there's so much to do, there's so much to experience, there's so much to discover in the unlimited ocean of bhakti that life becomes such a transcendental adventure. So therefore, Prabhupada would go to sleep, take rest. Devotees don't go to sleep. And Prabhupada would think, now I'm just wasting time. Who has such a dynamic life that when they go to sleep, who in the material world has such a dynamic, exciting, fulfilling life that when they lie down to take rest at night or go to sleep, they feel like, now I'm just wasting time? No one thinks like that. Prabhupada thought like that because his life was dynamically activated by Krishna consciousness. And so there's no real life. Sometimes people say spiritual life, material life. There's no such thing as material life because there's no life. There's no life in material existence. So I say not material life, spiritual life, material existence, spiritual life. Are we existing or are we living? Life means Krishna consciousness. So we got that life by mercy. And somehow or other, we have to protect it. Prabhupada once said, if you come to Krishna consciousness, you're very fortunate. If you don't come to Krishna consciousness, you're unfortunate. But if you come to Krishna consciousness and then you leave, you're the most unfortunate. He said, even worse than not coming to Krishna consciousness is if someone comes, but then they leave. That is painful. Prabhupada, when one devotee would leave, think like one devotee, well, there's thousands of devotees. When one devotee would leave, Prabhupada would cry. He said, I could not save that soul. So, but Prabhupada did say, and now this is the other side of it, that Prabhupada did say, don't be surprised who leaves. Be surprised who stays. They once said to Jay Advaita Maharaj, we should write a book about how all the devotees came to Krishna consciousness. You know, devotees have all these far out stories. You think like, I think he must have made up that story, you know, like it's too far out. Like all these amazing stories of how devotees came to Krishna consciousness. So devotee said, Maharaj, we should write a book on how devotees came to Krishna consciousness. That would be miraculous. That's miraculous. He said, you should write a book on how devotees stayed in Krishna consciousness. That's even more miraculous. Because in this age, it's not so easy. Prabhupada did say, spiritual life in Kali Yuga, very difficult proposition. It's not easy, not easy. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what it means to protect our bhakti. But maybe I just pause there, like I spoke for 20, 25 minutes. I just pause there to see, like, anyone have any, like, questions or anything you'd like to ask, even if it's not a question, even if you feel like there's some input you'd like to give, you know, some extra comment. That would be nice to hear from anyone on the call. Anyone would like to say something or add something before I carry on?
Hare Krishna, Sipata. Thank you so much. That was inspiring and touching. And one thing just kind of came to my mind. I guess it was a question. You know, there are those moments in ISKCON that feel not so nectarian. And they don't feel so inspiring. And it could be for many reasons. It could be, you know, because of bad interaction with another devotee, or it could be your own anathas speaking to you or getting purified. So I guess I wanted to ask, what can we do in those moments where it feels hard to be here in ISKCON?
Yeah, we have a certain vision of devotees sometimes. When we come to Krishna consciousness, isn't it? I think like everyone's a pure devotee. We stay for some time and we realize, no, we're all under the shower. We're all works in progress. We're still improving. And sometimes when we see a lot of imperfection around us, it can be very, very discouraging. If we're honest, sometimes we saw like better human qualities in people outside of the Krishna consciousness movement than sometimes we feel in the Krishna consciousness movement. Sometimes we feel like we should all be so much more saintly. And how to maintain our enthusiasm when we see that? Well, one important thing is to always remember Srila Prabhupada. Because when we come across imperfection, when we come across letdown, when we have doubts, dilemmas, when we have confusions, and we return to the life of Srila Prabhupada, and then we realize that's the standard. That's the standard of a Krishna Bhakta, of a Chaitanya Bhakta. That's the standard of what a devotee should be. Then we gain faith that even though around us we may be falling short, our leader, our guide, our inspiration is infallible. Prabhupada remains the guiding light. And therefore, it's so important for every devotee to have a deep relationship with Prabhupada. In the 80s, here at the Manor, some gurus left the movement. And when one guru left, then the temple, many, many devotees left the temple. So we had one devotee here, his name was Jiva Pati Prabhu. He's passed away now, disciple of Prabhupada. So as everyone was leaving, everyone was fighting, he also one day decided, I'm going to pack my bags. And he packed his suitcase. This literally happened. He was in the ashram, he packed his suitcase, he was walking down, he was just about to put his shoes on, and one devotee said to him, hey, Jiva. He looked back and the devotee said, where are you going? He said, I've had enough. I'm going. And the devotee looked at him and said, who's going to worship the deities? And who's going to take care of Prabhupada's interest Bhaktivedanta Manor. And it was just those two lines. He didn't even reply to the devotee. He just put his shoes back on the rack. He turned around. He walked up. He walked straight past the door. He didn't even speak to him. He walked straight past. He went up to his room. He put all of his things back in the cupboard. And he said, I'm going to stay here. And he stayed till the final days. He was here worshipping Radha Gokulananda for over 40 years. He said, I couldn't leave because I had a commitment to Prabhupada. So Gandhi once said, be the change you want to see in the world. So we have to kind of look at Prabhupada and say, we have a duty to make it better. And we gain our inspiration and strength from Srila Prabhupada. And I think the other thing that helps us in ISKCON is when we're faced with negativity or disinspiring experiences from other devotees. One thing is, don't take it personally. Because we think it's about us, but it's not about us. It's about that individual. When someone throws negativity towards you, then it means that person is suffering. It means that person is battling with their own anarthas. It means that person is stagnant in their own spiritual life. And therefore, we should never allow someone else's maya to become our maya. Rather, when we see someone else's maya, it's difficult. But somehow or other, we have to rise above and we have to elevate ourselves and elevate them in the process. So much humility and tolerance is required to stay in the association of Vaishnavas. But Narottam Das Thakur says, Tadira charane sevi bhakta sanivas, janame janame hoy eya vilas. To serve the feet of the Vaishnavas and to live with the Vaishnavas life after life, I have no other desire except this. So sometimes we say devotees can't live with them, can't live without them. So it requires so much tolerance and humility. When we used to, when we joined, like one of the first things we do is kitchen service. I don't know if they have in South Africa, but there's like a machine. And it's a machine that has a very rough edge. And you put water in it and then it spins. And what you do is you put all these potatoes in there. And then you put the water goes in and the thing is spinning on the rough edge and all these dirty potatoes go in. And then you pick out all the potatoes after some time and they're all gleaming white. So I remember every morning when I would go in and put those potatoes in and look at all of those dirty potatoes like hitting against each other and rubbing against this rough surface of water, cold water is coming in. I used to think, this is the story of my life. But we come out gleaming white. So it's a hospital. ISKCON is a hospital. And you can't turn up to a hospital and say, hey, what's going on here? Like, everyone's sick. What's going on? I mean, that's where sick people go, to a hospital. So we must always have a connection with Prabhupada. And let me say one final, sorry, this was an extremely long answer to your question. Let me say one other thing. There are saints in this movement living with us now. Don't think that the saints were people of the past. We are walking, talking, and functioning among saints. But you know what they often say? A saint isn't appreciated until they're gone. But if you look closely in this movement, you'll find incredible devotees, sincere devotees, simple devotees, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls Saragrahi Vaishnavas, devotees who have grasped the essence of what spiritual life is. And what we need to do is go and find and search out some sadhus and hold on to them. Because those sadhus The Bhagavatam says, Prashangam Majaram Pasham Atmana Kavayo Vidu Sa Eva Sadushu Krito Mokshadvaram Apavritam. If you somehow become attached to sadhus, Moksha Dvaram Apavritam, the doors to Vaikuntha will open wide. So let us find some saints. Let us become saintly by their association. And let's always be connected to our ultimate saint, Srila Prabhupada. And then when we have that saintly connection, then even when we're faced with the illusion of others, the illusion of the material world, we'll never become bewildered. Those are some thoughts.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Just before you continue, there's a private anonymous comment / question.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You're saying, Hare Krishna, on your point of why don't you make ISKCON what it should be? It is said that inspiration and ideas don't necessarily have any value unless it is acted on. Kindly give some points on how we can sincerely encourage each other, especially the younger devotees, to act on their ideas. To contribute to the continuation of preaching programs. Even a small contribution can bring such great change to a community.
Thank you. Very nice question. Yeah. Leadership means three things. Leadership means three things: inspiration, education, and facilitation. A leader is not just someone who inspires or gives good ideas, but a leader also educates and tells people specifically how they can do this thing. And then thirdly, a leader actually facilitates. In ISKCON, sometimes we have a lot of inspiration, but then we lack in education and facilitation and then carrying it through. So somehow or other, we need to transform our inspiration into some practical activity. Many, many small changes lead to a big change. And so with whatever experience I have in doing anything in ISKCON, is just start small and just get involved doing something. And you'll be surprised how it grows and what effect it has if you have sincerity. Nowadays, if you go across the world, there's a kirtan revolution. And there are many devotees behind that, but we can definitely say one person for sure who was influential behind the kirtan revolution was His Grace Aindra Prabhu. And what did Aindra Prabhu do? He had an inspiration about kirtan. And what did he do? He just sat in Vrindavan behind the harmonium and he just started singing. And just from his seemingly small act of singing in Vrindavan, the influence of his faith in the holy name has spread all across the world into the hearts and minds of many, many Vaishnavas. Because he had an inspiration and because he sat down and begun somewhere. In one sense, Prabhupada came to America. He didn't have the whole strategy outlined. He was almost thinking on the spot. Of course, we know Krishna was guiding him. But Prabhupada just came, and he came not with a big strategy, but he came and he said, I'm going to do something. So let's begin doing something. Yes, ideas are good. Inspirations are good. But begin. Just two devotees coming together, living, breathing, and acting on those ideas. And then the two will become four, and the four will become eight, and then eight will become six. You have to start somewhere. So I'll end this question on saying one quote that in the UK, they have an archbishop, and he said, when I was young, I wanted to change the world. And then I realized I couldn't change the world. I thought, let me at least try and change my country. He said, I couldn't do that. He thought later on, let me at least try and change my neighborhood. He said, I couldn't do that. He thought, my God, let me at least change my family, because I failed in that as well. Because then I thought, let me at least, I can change my wife. No chance. And he said, now in my old age, I realized that if I changed myself, maybe my wife would have saw me and maybe she would have changed too. And maybe with her help, I could have changed the family. And maybe the family could have influenced the neighborhood, the country. And who knows, maybe the country could have changed the world. So yes, ISKCON is a big place. Sometimes devotees get into like the ISKCON Kali Yuga Qatar. You know this one? Like two devotees are speaking like, ISKCON this, and this is going on, and that's going on, and did you hear about that? And oh my God, what about this? And then after 1 hour, they're like, anyway, what to do? And then they just walk off. It's like 1 hour wasted. We could have spent an hour in a better way, you know? So take one idea and do something with it from your heart, and it will make a change. So I guess, yeah, that's how I would respond to that question, that, yeah, leadership means inspiration, education, and facilitation. And, Prabhupada would say, do something, you know. Good ideas, but what are you going to do? You have to do something. So we should ask ourselves. One devotee always used to tell me here, at the end of life, Prabhupada will come. And Prabhupada would say, what did you do? I had lots of good ideas, Prabhupada. I was inspired like anything. That's nice, but what did you do? We have to do something, no? The global revolution begins with a personal resolution. So we have to try. Okay. I guess let me carry on then. It's 9:45. We talked about how it's so rare to be in as a follower of Mahaprabhu, as a follower of Prabhupada in ISKCON, and we have to protect it. And we should be aware of how our spiritual life comes under risk. Why is it that so many people come to spiritual life and then leave spiritual life? We have to contemplate deeply about these points. And I guess broadly speaking, we don't have so much time, but I'll just give you the broad map of why devotees become weak in their spiritual life. And these are no, there's no new tricks under the sun. It's the same things. Yeah, so if we would look broadly speaking, why devotees become weak and put their spiritual life in danger is because of, number one, offenses. Number two, familiarity. Number three, because of neglectful lifestyle. And number four, because of being outside of their dharma. So I'll just say a little bit about each one of these four. And then we'll take some Q&A and we can contemplate further on it. The first and most endangering thing to our spiritual life is offenses. Offenses is linked to the word fence. When you stay within the boundaries of Vaishnav culture and etiquette in your words, in your actions, in your dealings, when you stay within the fence, then the fence protects your bhakti. But when you transgress, when you go beyond in the way we speak, in the way we act, in the way we relate to others, when you go beyond the fence, when we offend, when we commit offense and we go beyond the fence, then that fence blocks us. Before, when you are on this side of the fence was protecting your bhakti. But when you go beyond the fence, then the fence blocks your bhakti. There are many, many different types of offenses. There's internal offenses that we commit within our minds. Thank God in Kali Yuga, we don't get reactions for those ones. But it's still dangerous. There are offenses that we commit unknowingly. We commit offenses to people and we're not even aware. Have you ever seen it? Like one devotee is being completely offensive to another devotee and they don't even realize it. That's scary. There are internal offenses, unknowing offenses. There are inadvertent offenses. Like you don't mean to, but you end up saying something that offends someone. It's like, oh no, Krishna, like, sorry. And then there is deliberate offensiveness. When we just know that this person, we want to hurt people. Whether it's an internal offense, an unknowing offense, an inadvertent offense, a deliberate offense, the root of all offenses is that we're insensitive. We're insensitive to others. We're insensitive to others, how others are feeling. We're insensitive to what other people are going through. And because of our insensitivity, we act in ways which are hurtful towards others. And because insensitivity is the root of all offense, that's why Krishna is so heavy. Because bhakti is all about sensitivity. How can you express devotion if you are not sensitive? To express devotion and touch someone's heart means you have to be sensitive. So what Krishna does is when we exhibit insensitivity, he gives a very heavy reaction. Because he's showing us that these very acts are diametrically opposed to your aspiration. And so, as we commit offenses, Jiva Goswami says, if you commit 100 offenses, you'll lose your taste for the holy name. If you commit 1,000 offenses, you'll end up breaking the regulative principles. And if you commit 10,000 offenses, you'll be removed from the association of Vaishnavas. Now, I don't know like how much like is strictly like, if it is strictly, we've all got our counters up there, you know, and the counter's going on. But we can understand the progression is like that. When you commit offense, the first thing is you're going to lose your enthusiasm. As you lose your enthusiasm more and more, we're going to end up being overcome by the mind and the senses and we're going to break. And then we're going to become so guilty, uninspired, stagnant, negative that we want to leave the association. And that's how it goes. But it all begins with offenses. So we need to be very, very careful. We can't talk about this enough. If we think about our lives, we should be more advanced than we are. If you think about it. You know, it's like Purushottamas. You know, like, Kartik is 1,000 times, Purushottamas is 16 times Kartik. And if you do one small thing in Purushottamas, you get like all this benefit. And you're thinking like, I've done quite a few Purushottam months in my life. Like what's going on? I should be more advanced than I am. But the problem is we're getting all this spiritual credit, but then we're committing offenses. So we're not experiencing. It's like you're eating and eating, but you're not digesting because the offense is like eating up all of that spiritual benefit. So offense, let us think very deeply about how to become more sensitive to everyone and everything around us. Number two is familiarity. And when we become familiar, then we become inattentive. One devotee here, he used to say casual. Casual means casualty. If you become casual, then you'll become a casualty. So familiarity is very difficult. You know, in the beginning, when we heard a kirtan, we heard the holy name. Nowadays, we hear tunes, we hear beats, we hear voices. and maybe the holy name is somewhere in the background. In the beginning, we heard a class and we heard a philosophy that touched our heart. Nowadays, we hear a speaker and think, well, that's a good point. I'll write that down and use it in my next class, you know. Are we hearing? Before, when a devotee asked us for service, we're like, yo, service, definitely, I'm up for that. Tell me, what can I do? Nowadays, we think, okay, well, let's not make any rash decisions here. You want me to do this service? What are the benefits? What are the difficulties? What's going to be the long-term gain of doing this? Like, very calculative. Before we met a devotee, we thought like, oh, that's a Vaishnav, that's a devotee. Nowadays, we kind of meet someone for the first time. We're like, oh, yeah, Savya. Oh, yeah. How long you been in the movement? And what's your achievements? What's your position? What's your position in ISKCON? Like, what's your mood? What's your mood? I need to know what your mood is before I freely associate with you. We kind of lost some innocence. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, Saralata e Vaishnavata. Simplicity is Vaishnavism. When one is simple, sincere, and they have not become familiar, then they make great advancement in their spiritual life. So we have to be careful of familiarity. Third thing is, let's become careful of lifestyle. Because you know what? When our lifestyle and our habits slip into the mode of ignorance and passion, then you can know Maya's right around the corner. Because karma esha krodha esha rajaguna samudbhava. From rajaguna, from mode of passion and ignorance, karma, krodha, lust, anger, all of these things are born of the mode of passion. So when we fail to embrace goodness in every aspect of our life, when we slip into passion and ignorance in aspects of our life, then we can understand progressively we're going to become weaker, because it is from that passion that all of these, the eternal enemies of the conditioned soul take birth. And the final thing I'll say and then open it up for questions is dharma. When you're living outside of your dharma, you'll become weak. Gajendra the elephant, Prabhupada mentions that point, that he was much more powerful than the crocodile, but because he was in the water, because he was in an unnatural situation, he was becoming weaker and weaker and weaker. We need to find the right ashram where we can be strong. We need to find the right place where we can be strong. We need to find the right service and occupation where we can be strong. We need to basically find a very conducive life situation, and that will give us strength. If we're struggling in our occupation, in our ashram, if it's not quite right, and we're living outside of our dharma, then know for sure that soon we'll become weaker and weaker and more uninspired. So we have to also live in the most suitable situation possible. So here I kind of conclude by sharing with you these four things. We're very fortunate to come in contact with this beautiful path of bhakti. And if we actually understand how valuable it is, then we'll do everything we can to protect it. And in order to protect it, let us be mindful of these four things, because these four things are the precursors to one's spiritual life becoming damaged. One is offenses. Second is familiarity. Third is unfavorable lifestyle. And fourth is not finding your dharma. So turn these around. Instead of offensiveness, always be open-hearted towards the Vaishnavas and attract their mercy by appreciating them. Instead of becoming familiar, always remain like a child in spiritual life. childlike simplicity. Instead of slipping into the molds of passion and ignorance in our lifestyle, always try to embrace goodness. And instead of living and functioning outside of your dharma, find a life situation which is very natural for you. And from that position, you'll be able to fight Maya much more powerfully. So it's 9:59 or 10:59 your time. So Navina Radhika, Savyasachi, I'm under your shelter and guidance. So whatever you want me to do, I can stay on and we can take some Q&A or we can finish up as you like.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. Always so incredibly practical, wonderful advice. I think we'll take some questions. I see Bhaktin Owa's hand is up. Owa, please unmute yourself and go for it.
Hare Krishna, devotees. Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Hare Thank Krishna. You for the wonderful class. My question is regarding devotees blooping. And I completely understand the way you've put it. But I've seen that sometimes devotees bloop and they don't return because they feel so much shame about their offenses. And how do we help or explain to devotees that Krishna doesn't get contaminated? Or am I wrong? Or am I right? That Krishna doesn't get contaminated. Even with all your offenses, you can still return and start where you left off and not be arrested by your shame, guilt, and so forth, that you never ever return.
Thank you so much for this wonderful question. It's the heart of our movement. There is the language of words, and there is the language of the heart. And so when we want to convince someone of anything, a new devotee, an old devotee, a bloop devotee, whatever it is, there's the language of words and there's the language of the heart. So when a devotee has left, yes, there's the language of words that we must tell them. There's always hope. Come back. But what I want to share with you today is sometimes it's more about the language of the heart. It's about being so loving. It's about being so kind. It's about being so warm that they want to come back. You've all heard of Jayananda Prabhu. He was a wonderful, Prabhupada said he was the first saint in ISKCON. And one time a devotee had left the temple. And of all professions, the devotee became a butcher. So one day Jayananda went to see him. He took some Mahaprasad and he turned up in this butcher's shop. And he said, where's this, the butcher, the shop owner said, oh, that guy, he's in the back. So Jayananda went into the back of this butcher's shop. You can imagine there was like, you know, all the animals, you know. Right at the other end of the room, he saw this devotee. This devotee had a knife in his hand and his apron was full with blood. Jayananda looked at this devotee and he just ran up to him and he just hugged him. And he said, you know what? We're missing you. Really good to see you. Here's some prasadam and how's things going? And he never once said like, hey, Prabhu, you're out of it. You know, like, how can you do this? Like, he never judged him. He just loved him. And he said, you know, we're missing you. Just come back. And that devotee said that one interaction was enough to convince me, because the love with which Jayananda Prabhu called me was enough to convince me more than any philosophy. Imagine this, Prabhupada had given sannyas to someone. If someone gives up their sannyas, that's considered like socially the worst thing. This devotee gave up his sannyas, and you know what he did? He sent the danda back by mail. Imagine you're a guru and in the morning you get a danda in the mail, you know? my God, one of my disciples, sannyas disciples, has left his ashram. Prabhupada called him. He said, don't worry. If you can't maintain it, get married. No problem. Now imagine this. Prabhupada sat in the yajna and gave that devotee sannyas initiation. Months later, or years later, when the sannyasi had difficulty, the same Prabhupada sat in another sacrifice and got him married to someone. That is how magnanimous Prabhupada was. So much love. So ready to openly welcome someone back. So somehow or other, we have to create that non-judge, a society of non-envy. It has to be so warm and so loving that even when someone is away, they just feel the warmth and the love of the devotees that they want to come back. And so we should always be very, very encouraging. It's incredible, this move. Like sometimes we go around the world like preaching and preaching. And sometimes I just step back and think, if we just kept everyone who was in this movement, yo, this movement would be buzzing, like it would be bursting at the seams. So somehow or other, we just need to connect with all of these devotees. So what we sometimes do in London is we set aside like 3 or 4 evenings, and we say on these evenings, we just go and visit different individuals, the ones you ain't seen for some time, and with no agenda, and we just and talk to them, and it goes a long way. So yes, Owa, let's the language of words to encourage them, and ultimately the language of the heart to attract them. Both things have to be there. Anyone else have any other questions or comments or anything you'd like to share? Savya, maybe you want to add something. His smile says it all.
You're still on mute, Prabhu.
If you're trying to say something, Savya, and you're on mute.
Okay. No, I'm just saying I'm appreciating what I'm hearing, because we're healing ourselves by knowing how to stay on the right side of the fence. And also at the same time, trying to appreciate what we've been exposed to. And when you see devotees, like, you know, I'm looking at all these faces here on the computer, you can appreciate that Krishna has made that common center for all of us, that all of this is all about trying to stay close to Krishna. And so like that thread that connects us is like this one amazing supreme person. And in trying to stay connected with Krishna, there's all these challenges. And but these challenges are what our lives, you know, should be, we should try to tackle those. Because as you mentioned, you know, if we're trying to tackle material life, which, you know, you said so wonderfully, there's no life there. It's just existence, you know. But then we're putting so much into just existing. We should transfer that, you know, trying to deal with existence and put it into spiritual life where there's actual life. So it's wonderful to be with others who want to invest in that spiritual life, which is so amazing. It's like it makes sense to fight for that. So I'm thankful of hearing you share with us, you know, words to encourage us to see what we have and how to protect it.
Thank you. Thank you, Savya, for sharing. Yeah. I think each one of us go through different things in spiritual life, and all of these challenges, all of the difficulties that we encounter, if we're able to digest them in the right way, we actually become empowered. Empowered in our spiritual life, we become very substantial in our realization, and we actually become stronger. But somehow or other, those challenges of life can only be digested in the company of loving Vaishnavas. I used to think, you know, like relationships was never like a big thing for me. Like when I joined the movement, one devotee told me, like, when you become a brahmachari, you become socially dead. And I was like, wow, that sounds brilliant. You know, like that's what I want to do. I want to become socially dead. And then I came to the movement and every other class was about relationships. And I was like, I came here to be socially dead. I didn't come here for relationships. What occurred to me over time was that even if there's someone who can survive without relationships, there are characters like that who are like very like, they can survive with, what occurred to me is even if you can survive without relationships, you can never really thrive without relationships. If there are loving people around you, who you can trust, who you can be yourself in front of, who are wishing you well, who are genuinely happy when you're successful and you're genuinely happy when they're successful. Such people, such company, such satsang, as we say in Sanskrit, is there's nothing more valuable in life. So even if you can create 5 devotees, 10 devotees, 20 devotees, whatever it may be, but a society of non-envy, where you genuinely, we're encouraging each other, it will really transform your life. So I think this is where it all begins. Coming together and being together and living together and staying unified together. Thank you. Okay, so if there's no other question, maybe we call it a day.
We'll ask for your final words in closing, if anything else you want to say. after all this, just trying to keep you some more.
No, I guess the final thing I'll say is Prabhupada did say your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate together. So in a time in ISKCON when it's very easy to become disunified, let us stay unified. And I'll just tell you the background to this story, how Prabhupada made that statement. Prabhupada was in his final days. He was very, very sick. And one devotee wrote a letter to Prabhupada. And he said, Prabhupada, in the Bhagavatam, there's the story of King Yadu, you know, like giving the youth to Puru and all of that. There's a story in the Bhagavatam like that. So he said to Prabhupada, I want to give you my young age. And I want to take all of your old age. I want to take the prospect that you're going to die. I'm ready to die. I'll take the death, Prabhupada. But we want you to live. So he wrote this beautiful letter where he said, I'll take your old age and death and you stay for more. Prabhupada read the letter and he smiled. And he said, that is a very nice sentiment. But he said, your love for me will be shown by how much you cooperate. Now, it's very interesting because if you read between the lines, what Prabhupada is basically saying is that it's nice that you want to die for me, But let me tell you something that's even harder than dying. Living and cooperating with the devotees. That's more difficult. To physically die is one thing. But in order to cooperate, you need to kill your ego. You need to kill your pride. That is not so easy. But Prabhupada said, your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate and kill your ego so that we can actually stay together in a wonderful spirit and make this movement go everywhere. You know, go everywhere, invite the whole world in. Let us really meditate deeply on this. Prabhupada said, cooperation and unity. That will make it Vaikuntha on earth. Hare Krishna. So I guess I finished there. Thank you so much for everyone for coming, taking your time on this Sunday morning. I'm coming to you from a very sunny Bhaktivedanta Manor in London. Hopefully someday you can all come here. Prabhupada said that Bhaktivedanta Manor is beautiful. And when the sun shines, there's no place better. So it's a beautiful day here and really happy to spend this Sunday morning with all of you and wishing you all strength, all success in your spiritual endeavors. And praying that you all go from bigger and bigger and more devotees, happier devotees. Gauranga, Hare Krishna, all glories to Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Sita Prabhu. Hare Krishna, everyone.